I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Tone Tech Luthier Supplies, your absolute online solution to all guitar parts and upgrades, and their new Tone Up range of high-quality guitar hardware from Sever Innovations, and introducing their fantastic new line of stainless steel replacement guitar saddles featuring innovative appointments to improve tone, increase sustain, string response, attack, and dynamics. The Tone Up replacement saddle springs, intonation screws, and saddle height adjustment screws are precision crafted from high quality stainless steel. For more information and to purchase your own new set of Tone Up saddles, or indeed any guitar upgrades or spares that you can think of, visit tonetech.co.uk or follow links in the description of this podcast. This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Orange Amplifiers and their Tremlord 30 guitar app. A very orange take on a classic, cool 1950s amplifier. It's a 30-watt 112 all-valve guitar combo with 2-foot switchable valve-driven tremolo speeds and 2-spring reverb tank. Everything you need to deliver high-quality, vintage-inspired, boutique-esque tones in the near-indestructible chassis of an Orange amplifier. Harking back to tremolos made famous in the 50s, the 12AX7 valve-powered tremolo oozes versatility and depth. With crystal clear clarity and buckets of headroom, the Orange Tremlord 30 is the latest in Orange's run of meticulously designed pin drop perfect amplifiers. Visit orangeamps.com/tremlord for a detailed overview, sound samples, and links to dealers worldwide. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. Well, not exactly. Actually, this week, dear listener, I came down with some sort of virus type thing which left me bedridden for a couple of days, which sucked because it happened on the one day that the UK guitar event, festival, conference thing was going on. I really wanted to go. There was going to be loads of cool stuff. Stonefield were going to have their new fretless bass there. Ashdown had this cool pedal board amp thing. There were so many things that I wanted to see, and I didn't get to see them. And unfortunately, that also meant that later that night, I didn't get to record the podcast. And this week, we've got special guest Mikey Demas on the show, talking all about his brand new range of pedals, Redbeard. So I had to call Mark Packham, ex-podcast host and currently enjoying a month's vacation from recording the podcast, to step in and record for me. But we failed to mention one key piece of information. This week, if you're listening to the free version of this podcast, then you would have heard that we are sponsored by Tone Tech at the moment. However, we are also running something that everyone can enjoy. Free listeners, Patreon listeners, we've teamed up with Tone Tech to offer all of you 15% discount in their online shop, which is pretty good considering you can get every single type of accessory and upgrade that you can think of. So all you have to do is enter the coupon code 15NERDS, 15NERDS, at the checkout, and you will enjoy 15% off anything on their shop for the month of September. Well, I guess you better enjoy this sort of podcast hosted by Mark Packham. Here you go.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your guest host for this week, Mark Packham, joined by Jay Cross.
Hello.
Matt Knight.
Hello there.
And special guest, Mikey Demas.
Hello.
How are we all doing?
Doing very well. Good. Over here anyway.
Good.
Yeah, I'm okay, thank you, Mark.
You're
thank
okay.
you for asking. How are you today?
I'm all right. I'm not really used to this gig. It's weird hosting. I've not
Isn't
even been
like,
a guest for like 4 weeks.
Back in the chair.
You're
back in the saddle.
Isn't it like riding a bike?
It's a bit like riding a bike. This is a bit
left
weird.
Left foot and then right foot and then, you know.
So, bit of backstory. Joe was supposed to be hosting. He seems to have either boozed himself out of the game or he's actually got norovirus, which is what he's claiming. So, we shall see.
Sorry, can I just... Do you remember that episode of The Simpsons where the Simpsons go and stay in Ned Flanders' holiday home and basically everything is labelled to within an inch of its life? Like... To the point where, fill me.
Yeah.
With water. And it's like, that is what Joe has been like with regards to not being on this week's podcast. We literally just had a text from him that said, just don't forget to press record. It's like, mate, that's literally the whole point of what we're doing. Like, calm down, it's fine.
I mean, to be fair, I've not... We're recording remotely this week because, you know, it's like a kind of a last-minute thing, Joe being ill. And I've not done one of these, like, hosting it before. So I did have to ask you guys, do I just press record? So the prompt from Joe was actually quite helpful. But
I like to think that Joe was out last night drinking 10 pints of what's known as something called norovirus.
Yeah.
I just imagine some like West Country brewery.
Yeah,
just
some craft ale that's
totally.
has a biohazard logo on the can and he's just done a load of them. So fair play.
Sorry, Mark, do you know where Watford is?
Oh, yeah, but, you know, I don't think... Is there a brewery in Watford?
Okay.
I just imagine the sort of brewery that would do a beer called Norovirus.
Oh, okay. I thought you were suggesting
It would be two things, actually. It would be, like, proper, like, East London hipster brewery.
It sounds like a cocktail from, like, somewhere in Shoreditch.
Yeah, or it would be Southwest, and it would be the strongest bitter you've ever experienced.
Yeah.
The norovirus.
Some proper cloudy cider.
Ugh. Yeah, exactly. That actually, yes, it would be that. It would be like cloudy, almost like brown cider. Yeah, exactly. Bad. So that explains Joe's absence this week. He's, I don't know. The last we heard from him, he was in a car trying to keep it together.
Literally.
Not good. So you've got us this week. And like I said, we are being joined by Mikey. Mikey, thanks for coming out. Firstly, for... filling in Joe's absence, but also thanks for coming on the podcast because you've got some big news to share with us.
Big news, yeah.
Do you want to give us the rundown?
Yeah, so this week I'm very, very happy and proud to announce and launch my new company, Red Beard Effects, which is a new business I've started, new venture, basically launching our first pedal this week. And yeah, really super excited about it. And, you know, I've basically been fielding all kinds of questions from the internet the past couple of months about it. And, yeah, we're finally here. We're finally ready to put our first product out there.
This is the problem with doing teaser campaigns, particularly if you're kind of embedded in the community as you are. And, you know, people see a kind of half blurry picture of the product and then it's going to be you fielding the questions until launch day.
And intentionally cloudy and... blurry photo.
How's that all been? How's the kind of run up? What's the kind of anticipation like? How have you been handling the barrage of questions?
Yeah, it's been great, to be honest. Whenever you do anything new like this, you always wonder how it's going to go. And I've sort of been inundated with people wanting to know what it is. And my lips have been very firmly sealed for multiple reasons. But yeah, I'm blown away at the response that just the small amount of teasing and small amount of, you know, sharing photos that I've been doing and we've been doing. So yeah, I'm quite excited to go to pre-order and see what happens, you know.
Let's talk a little bit about the company itself first before we dive into the actual first pedal. So Red Beard Effects, I think it's pretty obvious the inspiration for the name. but what made you settle on that?
Well, I took some advice from a couple of trusted friends who work in various regions of the industry. I was, you know, playing around with a couple of different names, but I'm not the kind of guy to get up in the morning and go, hey, check me out. It's beard time. But
I imagine you standing in the mirror and just like finishing cleaning your teeth and just about as you're about to leave, it's beard time.
Yeah, look in the mirror, give yourself a little point and go, hey, it's beard time. Well, this is it. And, you know, people, I was given some advice to just go with it. And so that's what I chose to do. And yeah, everyone's been really positive about the brand in general. So I'm really excited about it.
The artwork and stuff, like the logo is very cool.
Thank you.
Is that something that you did yourself?
Do you know what? Best kept secret, I did all the branding myself. Feel free to shoot me down.
Well, I mean, like I said, the branding is awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, in terms of like the logo and stuff. And to be honest, that's all I've kind of seen so far. So the logo is what I'm saying is awesome.
Oh, it is really good. It's the sort of thing that, because it's like fairly simplistic, but also it's very, you know, it could become a very iconic looking brand. You know, I think a really nice thing to have is a recognizable logo that could easily be graffitied somewhere.
Exactly. You know,
it's not out of the realms of possibilities that someone could spray paint this on the side of a building. And it's
this,
like,
it.
That's
I did,
cool.
I did sort of over the idea of selling stencils on the website.
Actually. Nice.
And that's still a thing I'm sort of on the fence about, because it's an easy thing to stencil. But yeah, one thing that people might not know about me is long time ago, before I was before it was beard time, I was actually a graphic designer for a fair chunk of my life, so I still know how to use Photoshop just about. I've sort of thrown myself into the visual end of things quite hard on with this.
How many designs did you go through before you got to that, or did you sort of know already what it was going to be?
Do you know what, I kind of knew what I wanted, and I went out there and asked a few people to kind of put something together for me, because I wasn't completely sold in my own abilities to know what to do to actually manifest what I want, and got a load of stuff sent back and none of it was right. And I thought, you know what? Why am I doing this? I just need to sit down, get in front of a computer and just get it together and knock it out properly. And that's what I did. And you know, it's sort of just using your own skills to kind of make it how you want it is quite a satisfying thing, really. So, you know, I've just been doing all the graphics, all the visuals, everything.
And in terms of like the pedals themselves, without getting down to the specific products, we'll do that in a minute. Mm-hmm. What's been the kind of idea behind them? You know, what did you want to shoot for in terms of, you know, products in the range? And, you know, what part of you has gone into this brand?
Okay, so I guess the way I felt about it was there was a bit of a gap in the market for an edgy sort of in your face kind of range of effects that were made in the UK, like made by hand in the UK. You know, a lot of the other brands that sort of I find inspiring, a lot of them come from other countries. And, you know, because I sort of champion a lot of British brands, I figured, well, you know, what's to stop me doing this myself? And so I went about thinking up some ideas for pedals and looking for a route to actually get them from inside my head to out into tasty little enclosures and out into the marketplace.
And do you want to talk a little bit about the kind of design? What went into the design in terms of the, you know, the circuit and how everything works?
So it's probably the worst kept secret of Red Beard Effects is that it's my I'm doing this with Adrian Thorpe of Thorpe Effects, who's a great friend of mine, and he's been absolutely elemental with every stage of designing the physical product. And that's from the internals to the externals, you know, the enclosure, the PCB, everything. And I'm kind of, we've been reining each other in from, you know, from making things too mental one way or another. So I come to him with sort of crazy ideas, and he has to get, you know, he's like the get real conversation person.
Yeah, it was funny because we obviously did the podcast with Adrian last week. We were saying, you know, how often do you have to kind of make the decision for the greater good rather than kind of going, this is a pedal that I want and it sounds exactly how I want it versus I probably shouldn't have that and it should be like this because more people will enjoy it.
Right, well, that's it. And it's not without trying to get too businessy about things, but, you know, when you've got a brand of anything, it's just like, you know, with guitar nerds, you guys know who your audience is. You know that you're not about to start trying to sell people the idea of like keyboards or that kind of thing, potentially. You know,
how did you know?
But you know that your audience are like guitar players all from all different walks of life, and it's just trying to give that audience the best kind of, you know, listening experience and that kind and putting that stuff into the community. And you know, with Redbeard Effects, I was kind of very conscious of who I could imagine trying to be into this stuff. And obviously with Thorpey's own brand, we felt that that audience could at times be sometimes different. So it's just been a case of trying to put the right idea out, you know, for the right brand, so to speak. And you know, Thorpey's got a really, really good thing going on. And I feel like what we're doing with Redbeard is kind of a good outlet for us to be able to do stuff that's really mental, that might not necessarily be his audience's cup of tea.
I think it's exactly the kind of right way to go, because obviously, you know, Thorpey's got a reputation for building fantastic products and, right, you know, great sounding. And then obviously you're bringing your sensibility to it, and everyone kind of knows the sounds that you go for through, right, through Skin Dread and the other stuff that they've seen you do.
Right.
And yeah, to me, it just seems like a real obvious partnership. And I don't know how to describe it, really. I think it's going to be a real good mix of the, like you say, the kind of crazy sounds that you go for, plus, you know, the build that people are expecting from a kind of Thorpey project.
This is it. And, you know, I couldn't be in a better sort of position, or I couldn't think of a better partner to have working with on this stuff, because his work is absolutely flawless and he's a really meticulous individual. And, you know, that goes from, you know, my understanding of PCBs and circuits is rudimentary. And, you know, that guy lives, breathes, sweats this stuff 24 hours a day. So not only has he got great ideas, got, you know, the builds are great, he's just I couldn't ask for a better person to be working, yeah, with on this. And obviously with the build of the enclosure, I went into this sort of thinking, you know, we could stick some circuits in a box and chuck them out and see what happens. But even that was a really meticulous process, where we wanted to build a custom enclosure that we had control of, and we could make it the way we wanted. So that we took that route. And even those sort of things, I came into quite sort of green behind the ears. I'm now sort of a lot more clued up on the engineering side of things. So that's been really fascinating.
That was one of the things I was going to say. That's one of the things that stood out to me today, because I hadn't actually until today seen a full picture of the pedal.
Right.
And now I have, because I saw Adrian today at the UK Guitar Show, which we'll talk about in a bit. Cool. And the thing that stood out to me is it's not just a standard enclosure. It would have been very easy for you to just buy like a three knob kind of regular box, put a pedal in, you know, slap your name on it, job done. But yeah, it actually looks very different. I'm still in a, you know, pedal board friendly format. But yeah, it really, I think there's two things, the design of the enclosure and also your kind of branding. Everything looks super slick. And yeah.
Thanks, man. That's what we were going for, you know. And it's a funny thing when you think about pedals, you sort of just assume that things have to live in a sort of Hammond type enclosure. And that's the kind of thing that can live up to being stood on night after night after night. But, you know, we designed this enclosure from the ground up, just like we designed all the circuits from the ground up. So not only have you got completely original circuits for our upcoming products, like we've got one that we're releasing, we've got a couple more that we're going to be releasing, obviously, but even the enclosure, it's made out of aluminium, it's super lightweight, it's, you know, we've designed things with flight in mind, we've designed things with pedalboard real estate economy of space in mind. You know, everything has top mounted jacks, which is, you know, the way to go these days in order to save space. We've tried to keep things modern, and going back to what you were saying a minute ago, you know, the stuff we're working on, it's my main criteria is like I have to like it, and he has to like it. And it's not even necessarily we're putting things out that have to work in a world that they don't have to be things that I would have to, that necessarily go with what I do all the time. Yeah. It's kind of like it passes through a kind of filter of, do we like it? Do I like it? Would I use it for this? Is it insane? Is it this? Is it that? And just more than anything, just wanted to create stuff that inspires and is a little bit different. And, you know, like I say, a bit edgy. and but without being just a copy of something else that came before. You know, I think it would have been so easy to put together a brand, like you said, that, you know, you drop a modified clone of a circuit into a pretty looking Hammond enclosure and paint it, make it look a bit sexy, and then try to palm it off as something.
So what you're saying is we shouldn't expect a straight Cheap Screamer clone with the yeah. Redbeard branding on it.
Absolutely not, no. And, good. You know, I'll tell you all about our first product, which, you know...
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, let's get into that right now, because, you know, it's launching in... Well, we're recording this on Sunday. It's launching, what, middle of this week, upcoming week. So mm-hmm. this podcast will go live on Wednesday, and, what, the pedal launches on Thursday, right?
That's right, yeah. That is right.
Tell us the name, tell us a bit about it, and, yeah.
Okay, so the first pedal, drum roll, is called the Red Mist Mark IV. Which is our first product. It's a really characteristic and at times savage and gnarly amp-like distortion in a box. What we wanted to do was make something which could transform a regular sort of humdrum clean amp into a full tubey destruction machine, or, you know, turn a crunchy amp into a next level kind of high gain monstrosity as well.
Okay.
It's basically, we wanted to make like a medium to high gain pedal which could transform someone's entire guitar rig into like the real deal.
I like it because there's so much stuff now, and I think it's simply because it's one of the easiest circuits to kind of clone and build, you know, where right. people are like, oh yeah, it's a kind of, you know, it's a linear drive that you put in front of a kind of slightly warm amp and it just pushes it over the edge. And, you know, with that, two things. I mean, firstly, like I said, I think the reason that gets built is because it's a fairly simple circuit to do. And the right. other reason is, I think personally, it's quite hard to actually evaluate those pedals because, you know, you're so reliant on what amp it's going into mm-hmm. and actually, is it making enough of a difference? You know, I find that a kind of sometimes a bit of a grey area. And I know we right. talk about make gooderers.
Yep.
It's kind of, that's not really what I mean. Because with a make gooder, it's kind of, you leave it on
yep.
and it does make everything better.
Yep.
But I think there's also a kind of category of pedal, which is, yeah, transparent overdrive. Mm-hmm. Some of which I love, some of which I think don't add as much value as they could.
Right.
But this sounds like something that is, you know, you're going to take a, you know, Hot Rod Deluxe or something and then turn it into a metal machine.
Absolutely. Or, you know, anything in between, like blues to hard rock to heavy rock to metal to thrash to punk, you know, all of the above, really. And, you know, like you were saying about the overdrive stuff, is there's a place for all that. And I love all that. I love those pedals that do that thing. But coming out of the gates, we wanted to really make a mark with something that was different and had character. And, you know, my main ethos is just when you press something, you want to know it's doing something.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the Red Mist, it's kind of, we wanted to, people to be able to maybe base their whole like high gain tone around it. Or, you know, add another channel to an amp that your amp never had. And it's kind of having the ability to turn an amp into like another amp altogether,
yeah.
so that you're not, like you were saying, you're not reliant on, oh, this £300 pedal really warms my dumbbell up just the way I like it. Yeah. So what was I gonna say? Something about I've lost my train of thought.
That's all right.
It's all good.
That's what this podcast is about.
Yeah. Losing my train of thought. But yeah, we basically designed a circuit from the ground up. Didn't want to make a Tube Screamer clone. That was like the number one on the list, you know, wanted to make something different. You know, everybody loves a good Tube Screamer, but we've played so many of them and just really, really wanted to make something that when you stood on it, you knew it was doing something.
I think that will help make your mark in the industry. I mean, you know, when we were sort of talking to Adrian, obviously the whole thing with Thorpe is no one can go, oh, it's a clone of this, or it's a clone of that, or the circuit, or, you know, the box looks exactly like this box, right. or whatever. And, you know, when you see a Thorpe pedal, you know it's that. And I guess it's the same idea. You know, he must have bought that into when you came with the idea of doing this. Was
right.
Well, he no kind one of, can
he,
go.
Right. And he kind of schooled me on the approach. And you kind of come in with ideas, creative ideas, and the approach of how to get there kind of changes everything, you know, about your methodology of engineering and PCB propagation and all that stuff. It completely turns the idea on its head. And, you know, Adrian is the kind of guy I've tried to get stuff past him, and he's just not going to have it. Like, he is not going to have it.
How
like,
about we put out a tube screamer?
we could have done that, but it's not his style. And it's not really mine either, to be perfectly honest, you know?
And actually, I think one thing that, obviously, that you know, the band and stuff that you play in and the sounds that you've done have obviously gone, well, like, you know, that's the kind of pedal maybe that I want. But Adrian's also a massive metalhead, right?
Yes.
So I think
little known fact, absolutely, yes.
So I think he was probably, because there's nothing in his range that does that, so I'm sure he probably saw this as a real creative outlet to kind of do something a bit
absolutely
crazy,
yeah,
as well.
Absolutely. And you know, the Red Mist, we've come out with it, it's the Mark IV, so it's kind of like episode 4 of Star Wars, whereas like the first one is like already way down the line.
I'm into that. What inspired that, apart from obviously, you know, A New Hope?
Yeah, well, that's a big, you know, that is a big inspiration. Like when we were designing the look of the pedal, and when we decided on the look, I kind of wanted this kind of modern vibe, but kind of had this like 70s-y vibe about it as well. Like I'm inspired by things like Moog,
yep.
Way Huge, you know, all those kind of MXR, all these kind of like pseudo retro, but also completely modern. You know, like you look at the MXR stuff, they've looked the same almost since, you know, for like 30 years.
Yeah, they've gone from just flat paint to sparkly paint in most cases, and that's kind of it.
So the goal was to try and make something that kind of looked iconic, kind of looked, you know, could be told apart from other pedals just by looking at them, but, you know, taking some influence from some of the big guys, like, you know, I always loved the Moog stuff, always loved Way Huge, and, you know, just trying to give a tip of the hat to that kind of design.
Interesting to hear you say Moog or Moog, whatever.
Because I think it is Moog, actually. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. to hear you say Moog, because actually looking at it, thinking about what it looks like, it doesn't look that far from quite a lot of the like Eurorack stuff that's out at the moment, the kind of Moog inspired Eurorack stuff. It's got that real hardy studio vibe to it, but it's cool. It's like a 70s cool.
Exactly. We wanted that kind of 70s cool, but kind of like modern edge on everything. And when you put the Red Mist next to some of the other pedals we've got going on, because we've got some other prototypes, obviously. And when you line them all up, they do look Euro racky. It's kind of weird. It's kind of like you just want to twiddle knobs.
Yes.
You know, get in there and get dirty.
I'm into it. Like I said, you know, it would have been very easy for you to put out like a 3-knob. You know, just standard box, and it's you know, it's brave to kind of not do that and do something totally new, and I think it pays off.
Right.
Bear in mind, all of this is without us actually hearing the pedal. So here at Guitar Nerds, you know, we haven't heard one in the flesh or anything. So
yeah, no, and I'm stoked to all the response that we've had online so far, just from literally teasing some blurry photos of what it could be, because by the time this podcast goes out, everything will be out there, but. No one's heard the pedal. No one would have seen the pedal, and so just to get the following that we've got already off of that is really inspiring, and I'm really grateful for it.
Well, it's I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to see how, firstly, to hear it, obviously, but see how it does, because, you know, effectively it is a new brand, and that's always exciting. You know, bringing new stuff, and with your kind of heritage and what we know about Adrian's stuff, I think it's gonna be mega.
Yeah, I guess our thing is that. We're not necessarily looking to make something that is for everyone, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Kind of, I play for a living, and my band's kind of one of those Marmite bands where you kind of either love them or you hate them, and that's okay. And I'd much rather that in some ways, that I'd rather be annoying people and rubbing them up the wrong way than just sort of vanilla-y pleasing everybody. And the same goes with the Red Beard effects stuff, is that I love the idea of someone plugging it into their rig and being like, oh my God, this is everything for me right now. And then I love the idea of someone plugging in and go, yikes, this thing is mental. Get it away from me. Because, you know, I'm not really inspired by the idea of just doing something which appeals to, on a sort of, yeah, it's okay. You know, I'm not, we wanted to make waves.
I'm totally into the idea of a new amp in the box pedal that you just plug into something clean and it sounds awesome. So, yeah, looking forward to it. Before we move on, do you want to let people know like where to find out more? Like, where's your site? I guess, should we talk about price, or do you want to leave that until it actually launches?
We can do that, no problem. So So basically, all our socials are really easy to find. It's all Redbeard Effects, all at Redbeard Effects. That's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook as well. You can find us that way. Our .com is just redbeardeffects.com. And at the moment, we're just selling direct from our own website and, you know, potentially looking to go to retail later in the year. We're figuring that stuff out right now. But, you know, our goals are quite small at the moment, and we wanted the first run to just kind of try and just get it out there and get a feel for what people thought of it and, you know, just start small and put one foot in front of the other.
In terms of numbers, before you get onto the price, that first run, I'm sure, is going to be a kind of coveted run of pedals. How many do you think you're going to do? Can you share that with us?
So the first run's going to be 100.
Okay.
So I've already got a lot of people signed up to our website for, you know, pre-order codes and what have you. So it could well be that by the time someone's listening to this podcast on Friday or Saturday, that they're all gone. And that would be a really, that would be a great problem to have. But yeah, we're just sort of, you know, dipping our toe in the water of seeing what the reaction is going to be. And obviously our goal is to do the next run as soon as we humanly can. And like I said, we've got a couple of other products lined up which are even more ridiculous, and I can't wait to talk to you about the next one that's coming out, but I can't talk to you about it because I've been sworn to secrecy by an ex-army major who will break me in. And I'm guessing, trust me, he's a beast.
I'm guessing it's going to be something like the Electro-Harmonix hand clap, but it just makes the dubstep siren noise. Is that what
you're going for? Even joke. Do you know, oh my God, don't even play. I'm convincing him at the moment to do a dub siren pedal, and we keep fighting about it all the time. I'm not even kidding. Like, yes. Do you know what we really need? He's like, oh, for God's sake.
That would be fantastic, mate.
This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Celestion and their brand new Ruby Alnico guitar speaker. Purpose-built to create rich, beautiful vintage tones, the Ruby oozes a richly musical warmth with mellow highs and a smooth, sophisticated mid-range that always seems to sound just right. The classic Alnico speaker shape and lush, deep red colour ensures Ruby really looks the part in your cab and guarantees that no one could possibly mistake this remarkable new guitar speaker's family history. Check out Celestion's new Ruby at retailers including Lean Business in the UK, Tube Amp Doctor in Germany, Algam in France, Eco Music in Italy, Ebelaud in Spain, plus Gear for Music, Toman, and The Back Shop. And in the USA, you can buy through retailers like Sweetwater, Musician's Friends, AMS, Parts Express, Loudspeakers Plus, and of course Amazon. And for more details, check out Celestion.com.
I know, there's a gap in the market, and at least four people would buy one, right?
Yeah. Us four.
Yeah, there you go.
And Joe.
Joe would. Of course. Yeah. So there we go. There's five.
Joe would have one.
I suppose you probably get it for free, though, Mikey. So yeah, four sales. Yeah, the four of us.
I think I'm getting it at cost, which is great. Okay, and I'm really happy with that.
And before we move on, let's talk price.
Okay, so yeah, the Red Mist is going out at $18,499, which... is really competitively priced for a pedal that is dreamt up, manufactured, packaged, built, everything in the UK by hand.
Cool.
Got it.
Wow, 185 quid. Nice.
It's not bad at all, you know, when you consider the price of a lot of kind of boutique stuff these days.
Yeah, and we've put a lot of work into the details as well. Like I said, it wasn't just a case of buying up a quantity of Hammond enclosures and dumping a clone circuit into it. Is, you know, every single element of the stuff we're putting out has been really, really meticulously thought about. And I wouldn't want to put my name to anything or sign off on anything that wasn't something I wouldn't say, this is a really cool thing. So yeah, we thought we'd priced it accordingly.
That's cool. Lovely stuff. Well, yeah, so Thursday, if you're listening to this when it launches on Tuesday or Wednesday, Thursday is the day. So redbeardeffects.com.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. So we did a little visit today talking about Thorpey. We saw him at the UK Guitar Show. Matt, Jay, we had a wander around. What did you see? What did you like? And what can we share about new products?
Well, I'll go first because there was something quite exciting, which actually I've kind of wanted to talk about for a long time, but we couldn't really say anything. And this goes all the way back to January 2017 when me and Joe were at the Ernie Ball Factory. today at the show, which was actually a bit of a surprise, I'd sort of been hinted that maybe something like this was arriving. And then it was just a photo was taken at the show and popped up on the Ernie Ball forum of the new Music Man Mariposa. And it's basically, as far as I'm aware, the Omar Rodriguez Lopez signature from Music Man. In a basically kind of weird body shape that's sort of half Albert Lee, half Saint Vincent.
Something like that. Yeah, that would be my closest. I would say it's actually, it's size-wise in between the two.
Yes.
It's got
yes.
that kind of, yeah, I don't really know how to say it. It's got that kind of like almost like sucked in middle bit that the Saint Vincent.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Got, but it's slightly more angular than the same.
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit more sort of. I mean, it just looks, you know, and we're going on about you know guitars like Millimetric and stuff like that have all these kind of wacky designs, and this definitely feels like. I mean, when the Saint Vincent came out, everyone was like, "That's a pretty odd looking design." You look at this, and you're like, "This is actually like far odder." But it was wicked. We sort of had a bit of a strum around on it, and it was a great feeling guitar, as you come to expect. So basic specs: roasted maple neck, not flame or bird's eye, just a straight maple neck, ebony board, two custom wound humbuckers, trem, so it's not a hot outs trem, three-way selector switch, which is in the scratch plate, and two volumes. So no tone on this one. Ooh. But apparently really, really responsive to the playing. To be honest, we didn't play it only because everything was going through headphones, and guitar shows are never always the best place to kind of really get an idea of how a guitar's going to sound when there's a load of noise going around all the time. But the most exciting thing for me personally, and I think for maybe some of the other nerds, is the color selection. Black, white, turquoise, which is the one that was at the show.
It wasn't called turquoise, though, was
no,
it?
No, it got some other weird.
It wasn't
name.
Agave, but it was like something like that. Like,
yeah.
I can't remember now. That's annoying.
And shell pink.
Yes, mate.
So I'm guessing that Omar listens to the podcast, loves pink so much that he was like, I'm going to have to make one just for these boys. And yeah. There it is. I don't know when they're going to actually be in store. I'd imagine everyone's going to see them probably at Winter NAMM, which is not far away. And I think price-wise, I'd imagine it's probably going to come out same price as the other one, so about $2,799. But yeah, a little bit of an exclusive look at that. So I'm super, super excited. Obviously, the original Ibanez ORM1 is now going for crazy money on places like Reverb. They're like $500-600.
Yeah, I had one of them. I sold it.
Yeah, well, they're great guitars.
Because they did them lefty as well.
Well,
he's a lefty.
Yeah, well, yeah, this is gonna information that's gonna upset you, Mikey, amongst other players is Omar, of course, left-handed. Mm. What is not happening with this model? No, left-handed lefty. Version.
Yeah, I didn't realise. So I thought that was going to be just, oh, you know, it's a signature model and, you know, it's hard to judge the kind of interest in that sort of thing. So let's try the right-handed first and then do lefties. Music Man don't do left-handed guitars at the moment, from what I understand. They will do something...
What? They don't do any left-handed guitars at all?
Something super standard, like a Stingray, you can get in left-handed. It's like Stingray bass, you know, something that's just kind of, you know,
yeah,
most people that buy a Music Man guitar is probably a Stingray bass. But yeah, according to them at the show today, no left-handed guitars.
Wow. I think, remember back in the day when I was playing Ernie Ball, where they did two models in left hand, one of them being the Axis Super Sport and the other one being something I never played. But I got a bunch of Axis Super Sports in left hand and they were...
Well, I think when we went to the factory, so to sort of going back to the beginning, when we went to the factory, we actually saw the body prototype of this that had all the etchings on it from Brian Ball and Omar, and we were talking about that. But when we walked around the factory, they were like, effectively, Ernie Ball build to order.
Yeah.
And that's why they're constantly building basically John Petrucci guitars when we were there. And I just think that they probably, I think if they got enough requests, it would end up becoming a standard model.
Yeah.
And I think they're just going, we're probably not really, because it's, I mean, obviously their machines are incredibly clever and it's all automated. Mm-hmm. But they've probably just gone, we haven't really designed the lefty version because we haven't had any requests. So it may come out if enough people.
I mean, I'd imagine they've had at least one request.
Yeah.
Can I have one?
No, yeah. Sorry, mate. You're not allowed.
Sorry,
not allowed
mate,
to have
not
one.
For you. Not for you. That's the standard
and
thing.
The scratch plate. I guess we should talk a little bit about the scratch plate, which I think is probably going to be the most Marmite thing on it. I personally don't like it. It's a sort of, it's not etched, it's like printed, like floral design.
Yeah, it's some sort of artwork. I mean, I don't know if it's like from an album or something. I'm not too familiar with Omar's.
I mean, the
stuff.
Man's had like 100 records.
Well, exactly. So yeah, yeah.
Quite possibly.
I think it's like a bandana.
Oh, is it?
I think so. It's right. Like reminiscent of a bandana, so it's sort of pseudo paisley kind of.
Yeah,
deal,
yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's definitely had that vibe. Do you know what the thing that struck me about the guitar? You know, I've been a big fan of things like the Valentine and the St. Vincent, but they've always just had something about them that's like a bit quirky in a way that is like a step too far for me. For example, the Valentine with the active preamp. The active preamp is just not for me. I would never really buy a guitar, particularly one that was kind of mega expensive with an active pre in there, because it's just not a feature that I need. Whereas this is so stripped down. It's volume, three-way switch. That's it. No coil tap, no nothing. It's just two humbuckers, volume, and the three-way.
I quite like the volume thing, I'll be honest. Not a lot of people do that.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, the amount of people that actually use a tone control is like no one, basically. So it seems weird that no one's really done this before.
I guess it's just kind of a thing that people always assume to be standard and they kind of leave it rolled all the way up most of the time, unless you're playing a specific kind of thing. But I find more use in having a separate volume for the neck on a guitar that only has two knobs.
Yeah.
I rewire all my tellies volume every time.
Yeah, yeah. Again, you know, for most guitar players, that would actually be more useful. But like you say, it's kind of been a historical thing that you have tone controls and stuff on there. So yeah, I liked it. And yeah, as Matt said, didn't get to plug it in, but feeling it felt great straight away. You know, they've nailed that roasted maple neck, and the board felt really good as well, really kind of responsive and zingy. So yeah, very excited to see what they do with it.
And Matt's face looks amazing as well. He looks genuinely bowled over.
Oh, Matt's face does.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's a photo up in the Facebook group right now of Matt holding the guitar. And I think you were a bit blown away, Matt.
Yeah, when we were at the factory and we were like, do you think it'll ever happen? And they were like, I mean, I've got a feeling, and obviously I can't say officially, but I think it's been in the works for quite some time. And I think he's the right kind of artist. I mean, you know, obviously Mars Volta at the drive-in, like huge sort of cult following. And I think they were just like, yeah, he's probably the right artist to fit alongside all the other kind of people that we've had signatures from. But I get a feeling that he was probably very particular about exactly how the guitar needs to be.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing their only thing was, I tell you what, we'll do all of this, but we're not going to build a left-handed version. but yeah, I just, I just really, really, really want to see it in pink. And I've got a feeling it's going to be amazing.
Tell you what the colour was. The colour of the one that was there was avocado.
Was it really?
Yeah, avocado. That's the colour. So it's avocado, shell pink, black and white.
It's like avocado bathroom.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's got a real kind of granny bathroom vibe to it.
I feel like the pink one needs a darker scratch plate. Like it's got to be black with like black and white three.
Yeah, they change it up for things like the St. Vincent, like depending on the colour, you get a different right. scratch plate. So I'd imagine it's going to be the same deal on this, but we haven't seen any pictures yet.
Okay.
Should we do some news? This is where I've got like stop and Joe puts the jingle in, right?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to do the news now. First up, Jay Cross, do you want to tell us about the Andy Summers monochrome Strat set?
Yeah, so this is something that, to be honest with you, I didn't know anything about until I saw it on the internet. But basically, Andy Summers, guitar player of The Police, has released a custom shop, well, master-built Strat, alongside Fender, which is something that's actually quite interesting. So apparently his two passions are obviously playing guitar and being in the band The Police, which if I was in the band The Police, that would probably be my passion as well. But so he does that, and he also is a very keen photographer. And he has released a master-built Strat, which is adorned with a bunch of photos that he's taken on his trusty Leica? Is that how you pronounce it?
Very nice, very nice.
Leica M monochrome.
Very nice.
Yeah, and basically, from what I understand, you buy it as a set, and the guitar comes with a Leica M monochrome lens.
Blimey, now, so how much are we talking here?
Well, exactly. So those lenses aren't cheap. I just did a little bit of Googling on them, and it's the Leica Summicron MF2 35mm ASPH. I don't know what that stands for.
Okay.
That on its own is about $2,500.
Yeah,
just for the lens. So the guitar is, as you would expect, quite expensive. It is going to be $12,500 USD, and there's only 50 worldwide, and I'm not sure if any of them are coming to Europe.
And
anyway,
I'm pretty sure most of them are probably already sold.
So yes. It's weird because the Premier Guitar article that we're pulling from here says the Fender Custom Shop Andy Summers monochrome Strat is priced at $12,500 and is available at authorised showcase dealers. The camera and guitar are sold separately.
So I think
just the price for the guitar.
Right, gotcha.
Worth mentioning, I think it's built by Dennis Galushka.
It is Dennis Galushka,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And I think, the camera... So is it a camera? Is it a whole... I think it's a whole camera.
No, I think you can get a set and a... By the looks of it, I'm just sort of reading. The set is complete with this camera, but I think you can go there and buy the camera separately as well.
Yeah, okay.
Was it his signature camera as well?
Yeah, it is his signature camera.
To honour Summer's work, as a compliment to the guitar, Leica created the Leica M monochrome signature. The limited edition camera features intricate design elements from the Andy Summers monochrome Strat, such as the leatherette that matches a collage from Summer's legendary photo collection. So yeah, basically... It's the guitar, and then separately, you can also buy a camera.
Oh, and the camera is expensive.
I just
Googled it.
The camera is more expensive than the guitar.
Go on, how much?
The camera's $15,000.
Yes.
So I mean, they're not cheap to start with, to be honest. You know,
well, I don't know anything about cameras, really. What, like Leica stuff, is it super expensive in general?
Right. Super expensive, but amazing. And, you know, it's one of those things, if you can afford it, it's totally worth it.
You've got to be a fan of not only The Police and Andy Summers. You also need to be a fan of photography and these cameras.
I tell you the camera looks quality. Like,
yeah, it does look wicked.
I don't know anything about cameras, so I'm just going to sound like a total idiot here, but it really does look good. And I think that the kind of inlaying of the photos around the like grip of the camera, I think looks really nice. I think
I actually don't think the guitar looks bad either. I mean, it's not something that I'd personally buy. Obviously,
the guitar looks great because it's a guitar and guitars are great. I was just thinking, like, normally I don't really care about cameras. You know, I've got an iPhone and that is fantastic. But this, I think, looks really nice.
The only thing I would say about the Strat, and so obviously it's the monochrome theme, so it's got all these black and white pictures all over the guitar. There's no scratch plate. It's a Strat, you know. And it's maple neck with black dots, except on the 15th fret where it's a red dot.
Which is the same as the camera.
Got it. I haven't got a picture of the camera here, actually.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, the it's
is
like
that to... like the take the photo button?
No, the take the photo button. I think it's on the what's the thing called? The aperture? I mean, I literally don't know.
The lens.
It's not the lens itself, but the bit that you turn and then you can change the focus? I don't know. There's a red dot on the camera as well.
Okay, fine. It just looks a bit weird on the guitar because it's in this, like, you know, everything's black and white on it, and then there's just the one red dot on the 15th.
But like even, I say, like, that's the same as the camera.
Yeah, sure, I get it. Like I said, so I haven't seen a picture of the camera.
The red dot on the Leica stuff is like the signature thing.
Got it.
But also it's the sort of thing that you find on a lens to sort of locate where it houses into the body as well.
Got it.
Most lenses have a little notch on them to go, here's where you go, ka-ching, and make it happen. I imagine that this Leica, I imagine the lens is permanently attached, but I don't know.
Got it.
And also, his actual photography is also wicked. Just going on his website and looking at some of the photos he's taken, he is an incredible photographer.
If you scroll down as well, you can see that Lenny Kravitz has got a camera covered in snake skin, which is pretty exciting.
Who would have thought it? Signature cameras for people who aren't primarily known as photographers. I can understand if, I don't know, who's a famous photographer? David Bailey? Is he a photographer?
Yes.
Okay. If he had a signature one, but who's next? The Edge. Is there an Edge camera?
Annie Leibovitz.
Yeah, she's a photographer as well. I don't know.
But I
don't
mean, it's not, it isn't any different to like the, what's the geezer from 24?
Oh, Kiefer Sutherland.
Kiefer Sutherland. He's got a signature 335. And
right,
he does tour, but he's not primarily known as a guitar player. And that's essentially what this is it's a signature camera for someone who maybe their profession is...
That's having a mate at Gibson, isn't it? That's having a mate at Gibson, sure.
Well, maybe.
totally.
I think it's just like a...
Yeah, being very Hollywood and having a mate at Gibson will probably get you a decent decent Gibson signature. So, Matt Knight, do you want to tell us a little bit about the new Blue Guitar Amp 1 Iridium Edition?
Absolutely. So, one thing I've realised from going to guitar shows is two things are certain. One, it will be loud. And two, Thomas Bluge will be there. He is literally at every single guitar show anywhere.
Was he there today?
He was there today. he goes everywhere. And he is amazing when it comes to like product design. He worked obviously for a bunch of people before. And obviously Blue Guitars have been his product for well over 10 years now. And every time I've heard him play, and he's always obviously using that, and I think he's actually got a signature vintage, but he's also got like a vintage 62 Strat as well, which he uses quite a lot.
He's definitely got a signature model, yeah.
Yeah, and basically the Blue Guitar, for people who don't know, is a kind of an actual physical amp in a box that uses nanotube technology. So it's based on his Marshall... I think it's based on his like Marshall JMP or Plexi. Like, I think he's got like 50 Marshall Plexis, like vintage ones. And his idea was to build that into basically a fly rig, but he wanted a proper power amp and everything in there. So the Blue Guitar has a clean channel, a vintage channel, a crunch channel, and a lead channel. You've just got a bass middle treble, an effects loop, and then a speaker out. So you go straight into a cab or whatever. But it's mainly designed for people who want that sort of vintage Marshall Plexi tone. And I think a lot of people have been requesting something that actually was a little bit more higher gain. And that's where the Iridium Edition comes in. So this is a all analog, 100% metal voiced, nanotube driven Blue Guitar, basically. So the same layout as before. You've still got the four channels. You've got gain and master, volume, three band tone stack. Obviously, 100 watts of insane on-the-floor power, but it's all voiced for sort of metal players, basically. And to be honest, I think it looks amazing. It's all in black, where the other one's in silver, with purple and blue buttons. And I just think, yeah, it's incredibly well-designed.
That was, as shallow as this is, that was my first thought. I was like, that looks way more expensive than the other one. It looks much cooler.
Yeah, definitely. And I tell you what, I mean, for like an amp in a box, I think every time I've heard this, I'm like absolutely blown away. And the feel is incredible because it's basically an amp on the floor. It's designed to be an amp. It's not a pedal emulating an amp or anything like that. It is an amp. It just happens that it lives on the floor rather than on top of a cab. And you can buy a programmable MIDI foot controller, a remote foot controller, series or parallel effects loop. And the fact that it's an all analog signal path, I just think it's wicked. I'm surprised I haven't seen more people use these, but it's an incredible product. So it's nice to see something with a little bit more gain built into it as well for people who want that.
Yeah, not mega money either, like £800. So yeah, for a 100-watt amp, it's not bad, really.
Yeah, it's obviously a lot of people going, oh, well, I can buy like a Moore baby bomb that's 30 watts and it's like £50. And it's like, yeah, but it's just a very kind of small, cheap Class D thing in a box, where this is as close as you're probably going to get to a vintage Marshall Plexi in a box, basically, without, you know, people say it's a Marshall in a box type pedal. This is a Marshall in a box, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they're absolutely wicked.
Can I ask a question that I'm literally the only person that cares the answer to, Matt?
Go on.
Yes.
Do you know what power supply this uses?
It has its own inbuilt transformer, so it actually runs on a normal IEC plug straight into the back.
Right, okay. Right.
Yeah, it's straight in.
As Matt says, it's an amp, but it's just goes on the floor rather than on top of a cab. So
yeah. Is it internationally voltage? You know, does it work probably voltage internationally?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe it's switchable inside. I can't confirm that. I'd have to read the manual, and I love reading a good manual. But yeah, I'd imagine so. I mean, I've seen him play all over Europe and the US. Yeah, mains voltage range 100 to 240.
Nice.
Lovely. You can literally go anywhere with that.
Yeah. So yeah, and I mean, it weighs 1.2 kilos, so just over a few pounds.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
2.5 pounds.
To take basically your entire kind of amp setup in something that will go in a laptop bag. It's not bad at all, is it?
I mean, I've seen people use this with like an HX Stomp. Actually, the first time I tried one properly was at the Thomann TGU thing a couple of years ago, and a guy was running his GT100 multi-effects with this. So he was using the GT in the effects loop, running basically using this to run four cable method. So he could have all of his distortions in the front end of the blue guitar, but all of the effects in the effects loop of the thing.
And again, that probably all fits in like a laptop bag.
Yeah, it basically all fit in like one little portable bag that you could take on the plane. I was like, that's amazing.
Nice. We're running out of time on the podcast, but I did reach out to the Facebook group to let them know that you were here, Mikey, for some questions.
Okay.
So I'm going to leave another gap for Joe now to put the jingle in here.
Questions.
There we go. So
that was a longer gap than he normally leaves.
Yeah, well, I'm feeling like if he's got norovirus, he's not going to be particularly accurate on the podcast edit. So
do you think he's just going to be like, leave the gap? Make sure you leave the gap.
That's what he's normally like. He's normally like, everyone, be quiet for a minute. But I think we need to just give him a few extra seconds to do it this week. Anyway, okay. First question from Joe, not our Joe, but a Joe. Mikey, you were thinking about getting/building a baritone a little while ago. Did you get anywhere with it?
I mean, I get a lot of people approaching me about building a guitar for me and stuff. And while some of that stuff comes to fruition, some of it never happens, I don't own a baritone. And I've always wanted to... I've never played a baritone. Never picked one up.
Really?
Never played one? I suppose there's not really... I can't think of any left-handed baritones. I mean, do Chapman do one?
Do you know what? The only baritone I've actually picked up and played was a Chapman. And it was right-handed and it felt absolutely awesome. Sounded brilliant. It felt super spongy to play. And I was like, I kind of get why people would use this. And it just left me thinking, where can I pick up a left-handed baritone that does the thing? The only one I can remember from when I was kind of really thinking about that a while ago was like the ESP Viper they did in a baritone.
Yeah,
But it's like, I just don't like the look of it, and they look so metal, and it's like a melting SG, and it's just I like an SG, you know, like I'd rather have a regular SG, even though I'd rather put up with the tuning stability and the heavy headstock on a regular SG than play an ESP Viper. Sorry,
surely you can get your signature. They can just you know, make just don't chop as much. Just yeah, just don't chop as much off when they're putting the neck on. Just glue a bit of extra on.
Pop a bit on. Pop a little bit in between bit of neck on.
No, the answer is no. I haven't got a baritone. I don't own one. I've never really played a left-handed one that does the thing. So I've, I remember Dan Electro did a baritone version of like the U2.
I was going to say, actually, I think your best chance of getting a left-handed baritone that you could use is old Dan Electro stuff, because I'm almost certain they did a left-handed baritone.
I think they did. I think I might even be watching one on Reverb right now.
Yes.
I've actually just done a quick Google, and there is you can get an airline.
Yeah, that's right. That's the other one. Yep. And I think Schecter make one as well. That's kind of like, I think they do like the upside down, like the Firebirdy looking upside downy reverse.
Oh, okay.
That's a baritone that they did do in Lefty for 5 minutes. But I don't know whether that was the weird 10-string one that had like 10 strings. And I don't know. I've always been on the hunt for one. Like, I don't own a 12-string acoustic, and I've always kind of been on the hunt for one, just the right cool kind of thing, or an electric. But it's hard to find left-handed stuff that's like quirky and weird, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's take another question. Corey says, does Mikey read music?
So I never learned to read music back in the day when I was teaching myself to play guitar. I basically taught myself with like some tab books and stuff, and like watching videos. Like, and by videos, I don't mean like Inge Malmsteen, like rewinding it and trying to do it over and over again. I mean like watching Nirvana, like, you know, swing guitars around on a stage, that kind of thing. That's how I learned to play bar chords.
Come on, don't lie. You know you've watched a bit of whatever his famous one's called. High speed metal death, or whatever it's called.
I've seen it, but it's not for me. It's just I haven't got it in my hands. And I actually started learning to play piano last year. And my teacher is actually really hot on trying to make me read music. Like, her whole vibe is, you know, she's quite studious, and she's more of the reading type of person, and I'm sort of having to do that thing. But I do find it really difficult, especially in later years. Like, it's the sort of thing, I suppose, if you picked it up when you were 10.
Totally.
You'd be like in your bones now. But I'm like, what? It's mental, because, you know, when you read tab or whatever, it makes sense. There's six strings. You have X amount of fingers. But with piano, it's like there's... You have to read two staves at the same time. You're basically learning, you're reading and interpreting what two hands are doing on separate things, and reading it in real time and playing it.
Yeah, that sounds hard.
It is mental.
And you actually, I did piano lessons when I was much younger, but you have to also not try and memorize the piece of music that you keep practicing, because you're not actually reading it. You're just...
Do you know how many times I've had a ruler smacked on the back of my hands for that? Because that's what I do. I cheat, and I go on YouTube and go, right, I'm going to figure out how to play this thing. And then I figure it out and I just memorize it. And then she's like, you're not reading the music, you're just blagging it. And I'm like, oh, God.
Is that a behavior learnt from like when Skindred decide to pull, you know, an old song back from the dead? You're like, I've got to look this up.
Go,
I can't
YouTube.
Relearn it. I'm just gonna go and find a video of me playing it.
That's exactly how I remember.
Yeah,
to be honest. I mean, but... you know, I don't think any of our stuff's ever been tabbed. I don't think any of our stuff's ever been like...
Have had a tab book out there, surely, at some point.
Nope,
really?
No. Okay. That's done with your publishing, and that's never happened. I should do one really and make a few quid. I'm missing.
Mikey, I don't mean to burst your bubble here, mate, but I'm not sure there's an enormous market for tab books in the year 2019.
I don't think so either. And, you know, looking on things like Ultimate Guitar or whatever, where you're trying to find stuff out, anytime I've looked at that stuff before, it's like people are wrong. They don't know how to do it.
Oh, yes. I mean, not specifically that side, but my experience of like crowdsourced tab stuff is like, yes, it's just wrong. Even a poor guitarist like me can tell this is wrong.
And I've obviously just revealed my that I go out late at night, I sit up on Google googling Skindred tabs and just mocking people for getting it wrong. That's what I do.
Well, here you go. Yeah, Ultimate Guitar, 51 Skindred tabs at the moment. So
yeah, they're all wrong.
even the one that says high quality.
Probably. Wow. I don't know. I don't think we've ever written a song called High Quality, but...
How do you tab out the dub siren? That's what I want to know.
You write a special symbol going, this is the dub siren bit.
This bit now.
You mash the buttons like a lunatic and turn the delay up really loud.
Just make the noise.
Do the thing, make the noise.
Well, with that, we have come to the end of this podcast. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to hear more, you can join us over on the Patreon episode, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you an extra half an hour. This week, we are going to... I've put together a little quiz, actually. I built it for two people. But let's see if it works with three. We'll have a go and see where we get to. It's a fun quiz. It's all about numbers and stuff. We can play that. So that's on if you spend the $5 tier. $10, you get your name read out at the end of the podcast in some sort of wacky song that Joe's going to put together and stitch on the end here. Last week, maybe it was sort of poppy. I don't really know what he's going to do this week.
Maybe Joe could like puke out everyone's name.
Yeah, maybe that. Maybe, yeah, I'll send him a message now and just say, while you're on the toilet, if you could just do the podcast names, that would be funny. I don't think he'd take that in the humour that it was meant right now. I think he's struggling. You can also join in the fun at all the social media stuff. Twitter is just at Guitar Nerds. Instagram at Guitar Nerds as well. YouTube.com/Guitar Nerds videos. Mikey, if people want to find out more, just reiterate the Redbeard places that people can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. So on Instagram, it's at Redbeard Effects. Twitter is at Redbeard Effects. You can find us on Facebook at Redbeard Effects, and our .com, where you can purchase our first product, the Redmi Smart 4, is redbeardeffects.com.
Bloody lovely. Thanks very much for joining us, and we will see you next week. Bye bye.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Mark Zau, Kadawaki, Rob Barstow, Stephen Burke, Robert Butterworth, Neil Milton, Maren Peters, Stuart Robson, Jeffrey Rax, Christian Lund Hansen, Zach Melton, Keith Adams, Steve Ferguson, Eric File, Andy Joyce, John Anglin, Adam Royce, Chris Jacob Moore, Rob Gruhl, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Amadon, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Hench, Rob Grant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Emery, James Baker, Juan Collier, Adam Sherman, Blake Wyland, Andrew Good, Jamie Kemp, and Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lowstedt, Hans Ams, Robert Smith, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordwick, Ed Bentley, Steve Merkel, Carlos Mancha, Andy Kenzie, Brad Page, Blair, Tom Scott, O'Brien, Laurie, Enstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clem, Gravit, Phil Tomsett, Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Scott Kane, Sean Arbo, Christopher Wolfman, Cuthbert Oh, the Guitar Nerds executive producers. Bravo.